And you know that automatically you're going to have three hits. Now, we'll talk about that this afternoon. So anyway, what they'll do is they'll look for how many of these were hit on the target as compared to the previous. The highest score you could ever have would be an 8, right? So if on the previous one you had a 7 and now you had an 8, it'll flag because you got worse. If on the previous one you had 0 and now you have 6, it's worse. And any value harder is going to flag out. Now, what's interesting to me is that I'll do reviews in section E1, A through P, and I'll go back and you only have three values you can choose. 0, which means it never happened, ever. 0, zilch, nada. No times ever was that statement or that indicator ever observed in 30 days. 2 means basically daily, so every single day out of 30 days, and 1 is in between. So I'm always amazed. I'll go and look at people's MDSs, and they'll all be scored as zeros. You know, on any given day, I show about 4 of them. On any given day, you know, making negative statements, you know, repetitive health complaints, whatever it is. So I'm always surprised people are zeros. And I think the government was, several years ago, they made mention that on an average month, the federal government receives 1.25 million MDSs from all of you. That's a lot of data coming in. And they've noticed that they've not seen a lot of depression symptoms because E1, A through P has been coded as zeros. Okay? Now, whether or not they truly are depressed is not the issue. The issue is that are you coding the MDS correctly from the get-go? And that's the problem with this section of the MDS, is that's often not coded correctly, so you don't get credit for it. Okay? The only exclusions for this is if your previous score was an 8, or you can't get any worse. If you're an 8 before, you're 8 now. Or coma. Oops, too far. Oh, stop. So why is this information important? Because obviously, you know, if your mood is terrible, then that affects everything in your life. You know, and that's why the activity people are the unsung heroes. Why? Because they keep your mood up. If they can keep you happy and your mind off you how you are, then you don't have a lot of problems. So God love them. So the thing is that they say that if people are really showing symptoms of having mood problems, then that affects their quality of life and their quality of their care. Okay? Percent of low-risk residents who lose control of their bowel bladder. Now, this is going to be important for you because you say, okay, now this must be a stratification, so it looks at people at high risk and low risk. High risk and low risk, but you'll note that they'll only show low risk. So we need to figure out, and we're going to tell you right now, so what do they constitute as somebody being at high risk? Now, what you may think as somebody being at high risk for incontinence and what they've indicated could be two very different things. So you want to pay attention to what they consider to be high risk. Well, first and foremost, if you go to section H of the MDS, section H1, I think it's on page 5, H5. H1 is now, this is an area that has a 14-day look-back period. The reason why they go back 14 days is to try and figure out the frequency of incontinency, both bowel and bladder. They would be able to, you'd probably be able to figure out frequency of bladder incontinence because people tend to urinate or void more frequently than they would have bowel movement. So it takes a longer time to establish incontinency from a bowel movement because you have fewer in the course of a week. So anyway, that's why it's over 14 days. And this will only flag if you mark the frequency of incontinency as being a 3 or 4. So you see they have a 5-point scale there, 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4. And so 0 means basically they're continent, and 4 means basically they're totally incontinent. And here's the key for all you DONs. When we talk about coding the MDS, that you're looking at, all of you have data collection forms. You probably have a boatload of forms in your facility. And do you collect information for continency? You probably do. But are you collecting it that flows to the MDS? Do you indicate the number of times? Or do you just put letter C and letter I? That's key. So when you're thinking about data collection, I'm not telling you, because the answer to all your problems is not a new form. That could actually be your problem is your form. And so ask yourself right now, of the forms that I have in my building, where somehow that data can flow to the MDS, is it set up that way? Or is it just kind of give me part of that information? Because again, this is looking for times for incontinency. And so 3 and 4 means it looks at the number of times that they are over the course of over the past 14 days. All right. Now, this is member stratified, means high risk and low risk, because obviously we're looking at low risk for bowel and bladder. And so they will exclude people who are high risk. So who do they consider being at high risk for incontinency? Well, they've given their definition. And you think, well, maybe the first thing that would come to your mind is cognitive problems, right? People who are cognitively impaired are going to be at high risk. But how do they establish cognitive impairment? Well, it's based on 2 questions on the MDS, and they both have to have this value, because if they don't have this value, you ain't going to get it. So short-term memory, so they say severe cognitive impairment. And so they consider severe cognitive impairment to be where they have a short-term memory problem, so B2A is equal to 1, which I agree with that. But now they say and B4, which is their decision-making ability, has to be scored a 3. Now, in most of my reviews, most of you do not score people as being a 3 for decision-making. They are mostly scored as a 2. So guess what? People who are cognitively impaired, who you've scored as a 2 with make poor decisions, they're going to be considered low risk. Does that make sense? So please be aware of that. You think, well, why is so-and-so in there? They're at high risk for incontinence because they're confused. They have cognitive loss. Well, not based on how you scored the MDS, they're not. Now, how they indicated that. So that's option number 1. Or people who are totally dependent in mobility. So that means that all 3 of these areas have to be scored as a 4 or an 8. That means bed mobility, transfer, and locomotion on the unit. You know what? Most people aren't totally dependent in all those areas. So guess what? So they won't be excluded because of mobility. So guess what? You're going to have most of your people in your building included. You're only going to have a few people that are excluded. So I want you to be aware of that. It's based on how you code the MDS that will exclude them. Okay, so other exclusions are, it's a target assessment, right? Because this is a prevalence measure, so the admission MDS is kicked out. Coma, okay? Indwelling catheter and ostomy. So if they have an indwelling catheter, they're excluded. If they have an ostomy, they're excluded. Again, high risk and low risk, only low risk is going to be displayed. And why is this important to the public? Well, because they say that loss of bowel or bladder control is not a normal sign of aging. Like I just said, you're not just going to all of a sudden start going to the bathroom on the floor because you turn 70. So they want to find out why, and you have a wrap that will help somebody through this assessment. You've got a wrap that does that. You've got the resident level assessment that goes through and helps try and figure out why. But they basically say that finding the cause and treating a problem with bowel or bladder is important for many reasons. You know, physically it can help prevent infections. It can help you a sense of well-being. So it just basically says if you've got more residents who can control their bladder, it gives you more time to do other things. So if you're not spending all your time taking them back and forth, if you can try to put your finger on the causes of incontinency, that it will free you up to do the other things within the building. Okay? Percent of residents who have had or had a catheter inserted and left in their bladder. Oh, that sounds so ugly, doesn't it? Oh, that sounds ugly. This is H3D on the MDS, so still over a 14-day window, and I was looking to see if ever in a 14-day period that they had a catheter in. Even if it's no longer in the last day of the observation period, did they have at any given point in time a catheter in? Okay, this is risk adjusted for, so this is part of the covariate they've got, bowel incontinence and pressure sores. But we'll just suffice it to say, they're looking to see from catheters because catheters have such horrible implications in the nursing home, right? That all of a sudden a catheter should only be used when medically necessary, that residents may need a lot of help to get to the toilet or they may have to go more frequently, and it should not be used for staff convenience. Okay? They're basically saying all the complications that can stem from that. Most people don't have a lot of catheters in the building. But there are only about a half a dozen or so reasons for actually having a catheter, and those are listed for you in the, because the catheter is actually a wrap. You have a urinary incontinence, indwelling catheter wrap on the resident level, and within that urinary incontinence, indwelling catheter wrap, they specify the four or five reasons for actually having a catheter. Okay? They specify right in the manual why these are the only plausible reasons for having a catheter in. Okay, so basically saying that people should not have catheters in the building. Okay, ooh, the people moving around the building. These are the percentage of people whose locomotion on the unit. This is G1E. If you want to go back to section G. Now, section G. What's very interesting about this item, actually there are four of them, walk-in room, walk-in corridor, locomotion on the unit, locomotion off the unit. This only looks at locomotion on the unit, but the key about this one is locomotion differs from walking. Walking means with your legs. Locomotion means either walking and or wheeling once they're in their wheelchair. So it looks at anybody and how they cruise around your building. But also another key point about this item on the MDS is that it looks at how they cruise within their environment, either in their room or on the hallway outside their room. So it's with how they maneuver within their environment. And apparently this quality measure says their ability to maneuver, their own ability to maneuver has somehow diminished. So residents whose value, whose self-performance, remember, for all of these ADLs for quality measures, they're only looking at self-performance. So the residents' ability to maneuver around got worse from one assessment to another. Okay? And they do some risk adjusting, like if they've had a fall, assuming that if they've had falls, maybe they're declining in their ADLs, or they require some more dependence and these things. So they're assuming that they'll risk adjust these depending on if it appears that somebody is declining, but they're going to want you to figure out why they're declining. Exclusions for this are if they were totally dependent before, well, they can't get any worse right now, so they'll be excluded. Coma, end-stage disease and hospice care. You can see these are the three biggies again. And then the public sees the same things that you need to make every effort to try and help promote activities and improve these people's strength. But that some people are going to decline regardless. Percent of residents who have moderate to severe pain. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because we did spend some time on the post-acute care side. It's the same way. Either one of those two options either has to be pain daily at a moderate level or excruciating pain ever once. Okay? They do risk adjust this with their ability to make decisions. So they're going to make it so that if somebody has a hard time making decisions, your score is going to actually look worse because maybe these people cannot tell you they're in pain. So they're going to look at how you scored B4 on the MDS because it's going to nudge your score. Because if people have a hard time making decisions, maybe they have a hard time expressing themselves, and so therefore it's going to make you look harder. The admission assessment is excluded. Physical restraints. The key for this one is people who are physically restrained daily. Please look at section P4 on the MDS. What is the title for this section?
Special treatment methods feature.
For P4. Is that the true title for this section? The reason why I tell you that is that you have to realize that the MDS format you're looking at is incorrect. Did you realize that? That it won't be changed until they revise the MDS form. But what happens is that I believe it was in December of 2002 when they updated the training manual, they took out a word here. They took out the word devices. So P4 should only be restraints. Because people were coding devices and restraints here, whether or not the device was restrictive. And so please be aware that the title of this section is actually restraints and not devices and restraints. But they Briggs cannot change the form until there's an actual change in the form. You with me? Now, there's another section of the form that's like this too. Something else changed. April. Does anybody know what section of the MDS changed in April? A big one. M1, ulcers. Read section M1 right now on the MDS form that you have. What does the MDS form say? It says ulcers due to any cause. The words due to any cause were removed. Now they're based on three causes that you coded here. So the words due to any cause were removed. And so everywhere in the training manual, those words were removed. But on the form it says due to any cause. So please disregard that. Because you know what, and that's why you have to know this, because you could inadvertently code the MDS incorrectly if you don't know that they changed that title. So, P4 has to do with restraints. And restraints only, not device and restraints, but simply restraints. And what's interesting about this is that they'll only flag if it's daily. You have three choices. They're not restrained, it was less than daily, or daily. So they'll only flag it if it's daily, and they only will flag three of the restraints. They don't care about, well, it's not they don't care about, but right now it's the bed rails are not part of the measure. It's chair prevents rising, trunk and limb restraints. So it's C, D, and E. And the key for this is knowing how to code a restraint. What is the definition of a restraint? And they tell you that in the manual what it is. And again, this is not risk adjusted because they consider this as within your control. And the target assessment would be excluded because it's a prevalence measure. Thoughts and comments on this? Why is this information important? Oh my gosh, you have a wrap on this. The whole focus of the wrap on restraints is to get rid of them. That's the whole focus, is to get rid of them. They don't see any earthly reason why you should have them. Okay? And so they go and tell the public that restraint's not a good thing. And they try and tell them that, and they even say facilities are not allowed to use restraints based solely on a family's request. I would tell them that too. So again, I think that but it's also, as an FYI for DONs and administrators, it's also how someone codes the MDS. So when we talk about when you're looking at your quality measures and or your quality indicators, I don't care what you're looking at, but if you're looking at it to improve quality of care within your building, the quality measures, remember, looking a little further back in the past, so it's not current information, but the first thing I would tell you, if you have questions on any of the measures, what's the first thing you would do? I would check to make sure my MDS was correct. Because that may be the key right there. You may be incorrectly coding this, and therefore, how can you fix a problem when it's not a problem with the individual, but a problem with how you're collecting data. It's not a resident issue, it's a human resource or personnel issue, okay? So again, they're looking at restraints. A high risk or low risk for pressure sores. Now this is gonna be stratified, so they're gonna produce both. So now you and I need to figure out what is high risk, because everybody who's not high risk is gonna be low risk, okay? So how will this eventually even flag? It will flag in one of two ways. Either A, you've coded this, someone has a pressure ulcer, an M2A, which means that it's important that you indicated that the reason or the underlying cause of that area was based on unrelieved pressure. And that's key. Oh, I'll tell you later on. I got excited there for a moment. Anyway, or you've marked 707 as an ICD-9 code on the MDS form itself. Okay? Now, who are high-risk people? High-risk people are on the MDS. You've indicated that they have a hard time. They require either extensive or they're totally dependent in bed mobility or transfer. Okay? Coma. Or malnutrition. See, you know what else I would think would be high-risk for this? Incontinence? How about weight loss? I don't see it on there. But just, as an FYI, so the high risk are if they've got altered bed mobility or transferring. And really, that's probably your biggest one. Other than that, most people are not going to be in a coma. And most people don't have malnutrition issues that you're going to be coding as an ICD-9 code. Other than that, everybody else is a low risk. Okay? Other than that, everybody else is low risk. Thoughts on that? Comments? So low risk is everybody else. Same way, you code it on the MDS as having M2A is scored as having a pressure ulcer, 707, and so forth. The admission assessment is excluded, though. That's kind of nice. So they're not going to penalize you for the admission MDS because why should you be penalized for something that was outside of your control? There are things that happen prior to coming to your building. Yeah, but hopefully they won't, but you never know, they could. They could. With a stage four, yes. Yeah. Okay. Percent of residents with a urinary tract infection. In UTI. So they took out infections, now they give UTI. Now this one's kind of goofy on the MDS. This is protection I2, and I2 has to do with infections, and all the infections looks like it's a 7-day window, except this one. So we're 30. So it's a 30-day look-back period. So on their most recent assessment, did you mark that somebody in the last 30 days had a UTI? The admission assessment is excluded. Okay, that's cool. And so why is it important that the public sees that, gosh, if somebody has a urinary tract infection, that could mean all kinds of things like, hey, you're not cleaning them pretty well, or hey, maybe they're not getting enough to drink, or something might be going on. So you need to take a look at it because there are serious complications like delirium may come from that fact that they have an infection. So what are you doing to take care of that? Golden chicken opportunity for somebody. Raise your hand if you know the answer to this. To code the UTI, and if you haven't won anything yet, to code the UTI in the last 30 days on the MDS, what three things must be noted in the clinical record to support its coding? Have to have three things. Somebody raise their hand, tell me. Can I raise your hand? Okay, first thing she said was symptoms. Is she right? Ding, 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 ding. So clinical signs and symptoms must be noted. What's number two? Significant laboratory findings. Oh my gosh, she's got two out of three. And the final one is? And the third one is? I heard her say in my mind, physician diagnosis. not just a physician's order, but you have to have all three of these. Okay, you just can't say, well, the person, the doctor ordered that. The doctor said they had a UTI. That in and of itself will not mark it on the MDS. You must have all three things noted in that 30-day time frame. If one of those three is not there, you don't mark it. So you could have a chronic UTI where you're getting Bactrim, right, forever. But if there are no symptoms indicate, no clinical symptoms of the infection, guess what? You don't mark it. Now, I'm going to explain something to you about this item, is that in my when I did the presentation in New York City, here's your chicken. I knew it was coming from this row. What was cool about that presentation is that I had a couple hundred people there as well, but you know who I had in my audience? I had two medical directors. And that was cool. That was awesome. And it was a male and a female doctor. And the female doctor said, she was a medical director, and she said, and here's the question before I tell you what she said, how many of you have ever talked to your physician about the MDS? And I always get the laughing. They don't know that. You have to. Now you're not going to tell them everything, but you know what? There are key pieces of the MDS that they have to know about, or else they can't help you. They don't know that a fever is 2.4 degrees above the established baseline. They don't know that in order to mark dehydrated on the MDS, you have to have 2 out of 3 criteria. They don't know that they have to have all this stuff in there before you can code as a UTI. They don't know that. They don't know that. So the interesting part was that this lady, the female doctor said, I'm working with them so that she knows what to code. She goes, how can I help them if I don't know that? And the male medical director, he came up afterwards, and he said that he, you know, has, he goes to a lot of facilities, and he has, you know, many physicians that he works with, and a prerequisite for him as a medical director is that he makes every physician fill out an MDS on somebody. And they have to sit down and compare their answers with the MDS coordinator to see so they understand what kind of an assessment is done on the people that they're caring for. Now, is that not awesome? I gave him like two chickens. But to me, that's where it has to be. And he said, I said, well, how do you get physicians to do that? And he said, it's one of my rules. He said that, how can they not know this? And he just said that it was imperative for him. So I would make a suggestion to you, when we talk about some of these other things, we talk about coding this afternoon, that you give at least your physicians a heads up, because if they don't know how to help you, guess what, they won't. If they don't know how they can be a part of this process. So just please be aware to tell the physicians that in your next meeting with them or whenever you get together with them, that these are very important things on the MDS on how they can help you. Okay, some additional quality measure information, just as an FYI for you. Again, it's important for you that you can pull your own quality measure information off of the KEYS system. So I would just make the comment, if you would, that every administrator in here, you should go and pull off your own data this coming month. Learn how to do this. There is a wealth of data available for you. Just go learn how to do this. And then within 2 weeks after you get, you'll receive the resident list for your people. So then you'll know, okay, which residents it was that flagged the pressure ulcers. Which residents was it that flagged the physical restraints? And go take a look to make sure that it was coded correctly to begin with. Okay? And you want to make sure you're printing all this stuff, because as they replace the data, it's gone. They're not going to say, oh, we'll give it back to you. Just make sure you're printing off your data and keep a running history of this. So this is an example of some of the stuff you pull off of KEYS. So you'll know the numerator, the denominator, and the percentage. So if you don't understand, we're not going to go through this report, But if you don't understand, because they have some strange numbers, like a code of 199 means that you don't have enough residents or the percentage was too small. If you don't understand some of this data or you want more information, that's where you contact these people. In the upstate New York, you either have Dave Johnson or Marjorie Horner. So call them because they'll be able to help you explain these reports to you and probably strategies for where to look at. Okay? So that's what you pull off. And again, this was the last quarter information. So this is the calendar right here. So in July of 2004, the chronic care measures that you'll be getting will be based on data that somebody sent January through March for the chronic care. And then for the post-acute care, it'll be from October through March. So remember, if you look at the old data, and keep that in mind, but it's great data from a standpoint of looking for trends or things to be. The nursing home industry loves to be reactive and not proactive. We like to wait till something horrible has happened, then we'll do something about it. But you've got to be proactive with this. This is not something you can let go, okay? And then you need to check the Nursing Home Compare website out because they will have updates, not only on your quality measures, but they have all kinds of goodies. Your last three surveys, facility characteristics, who owns you, your address, all that kind of fun stuff about your buildings. And a lot of that stuff is collected from OSCAR information, so stuff you already send in. The nursing home quality measures and the quality indicators, they're similar, but they're different. So just please be aware of that. If you're looking from a quality improvement standpoint, it's not comparing apples to apples. They're similar pieces, but they have different risk adjustments, different exclusionary factors, different assessments that they're using. Because remember, the quality indicators do not use Medicare assessments. Okay, they only use OBRA assessments. So with that, we're going to take our break for lunch. All right, we're going back. Now we're going to dive in to the actual MDS items that correlate with the quality measures. Because again, if the accuracy of your MDS that goes into producing these, and if iPro, remember, iPro people are automatically going to assume too that the data that comes from your facility is 100% right, aren't you? That's going to be looking at things that are going on in your building. So we need to make sure that from our standpoint that we're giving them a heads up, making sure that from the get-go, we're looking at good data. So now this actually starts, it kind of is two ways. Look at it's a page 80 as well at the same time. Maybe page 80 of your handout, the 80 or 81. So we're kind of going back and forth here. So I've got two different. One is a PowerPoint, but then also I have this landscape type document that will be helpful for you to take a look at. So you can look at this at the same time. So this actually starts on page 82. All right. We're going to try and go in alphabetical order through the MDS of those MDS items that somehow play a role, whether it's a risk adjustment, whether it's exclusion, whether it's a covariate, whatever, how it influences the quality measures. Well, first and foremost, it's AA8. Remember the reason for the assessment. If it's an admission MDS, look how many of the quality measures are excluded by just simply having it as an admission MDS. So that's the power of knowing the assessment type, that it can simply be exclusionary for many, many, many MDS quality measure items. So that's just an FYI for you. There we go. Okay. Next is the residential history. This is AB5 on the MDS. So remember, it's on the background information face sheet. As an FYI for you, if you look at that item on the MDS, AB5, maybe you looked at that before, but just as an FYI for all MDS coordinators, here's a little tidbit to see if you knew this or not. The background face sheet is the only document of all the MDSs that can be updated at any point in time throughout the course of the resident stay. It's also the one document that must remain on the active chart. It cannot be thinned off. So the background information face sheet should be torn away and be kept and do not thin from the active record. All right. So this is AB5 on the MDS, and it looks at, remember, where they stayed, where they lived. I think that's the key word, is where they lived in the 5 years prior to their date of entry. Okay? So as you look at those items on there, you know, prior stay in this nursing home, stay in another nursing home, but here's the key for this one, so make sure you're not coding this wrong. Exclude limited stays for treatment or rehab when the resident had a primary residence to return to. So for example, if I had been in your facility before for therapy for just maybe a couple of weeks, well then you, and that had been in the previous 5 years, you would not code me as prior stay at this nursing home. You would not code me there because it was temporary. It was for rehab. It wasn't a place where I was living. It was more of a place where I was receiving care for a temporary time. Does that make sense? So please make sure that you're not coding somebody as residing there when they really were there temporarily. And as you can see how many that it influences the delirium one. The keys for this section is certainly you want to review the record. You want to talk to the family, and you want to talk to friends or whoever it was who might know information about this individual. And talk to the resident's physician. But the key is that, did they reside there? Is it warm in here? I got that. All right. Oh, comatose! This is B1 on the MDS form. Comatose. If any of you have trouble figuring out if your resident's in a coma, then you will see me at 3:31 today. Because you go up to me and say, are you there? Coma. Okay. This is one of those questions on the MDS that's really pretty fairly straightforward. You're looking for a physician's diagnosis if they're in a coma or they're in a persistent vegetative state. Don't make me come out there. I will find it. All right. Someone's phone's going off, or a beeper or something. So anyway, so this one's not a tough one, but as you can see from a coma standpoint, if you code it on the MDS, look how many exclusionary from the quality measure, how many they're excluded from. I mean, not that that's a key thing, but just you can see how that one question on the MDS has far-reaching implications. So anyway, the key for this one is make sure you have a physician diagnosis of either coma or persistent vegetative state. So no key excitement for this particular item on the MDS. Oh, short-term memory. Now, this one is a little bit different. This is B2A on the MDS, and as if you take a look at that on the MDS form, it must be a very important question because it's in pink, it's got number by it. It means something. And it's actually, you know, part of the, remember this is the at risk for incontinence. Remember there was B2A and B4 equal to 3? Let's talk about this question because your average nurse, your average long-term care staff member would not know that to assess someone's short-term memory, it's memory recall over 5 minutes. Now, that does not mean that long-term memory is 6 minutes or more. Does not mean that. Okay, it's like 6 minutes, oh, it's long-term memory. No, that's not, does not mean that. It just means that what you're trying to do is that, like if I told you, you know, half an hour ago I ate, you know, chicken and baked beans and you saw that, you say, well, I just assessed Andrea's short-term memory. Not true. That they're looking for an immediate time frame. Now, I will explain to you something about the state of Indiana, okay? Of the 30 states in the country that are getting reimbursed on the Medicaid side from the MDSs. The state of Indiana is only one of two states that require documentation for this. The MDS by itself is considered to be its own source of information. You don't have to have documentation in the clinical record to show everything on the MDS. So from the federal government's perspective, the MDS is a primary source document. That's cool. But in 1996, okay, there were questions and answers put out by HCFA, known as HCFA at that time, And they put out 250, and question 211 asked if the MDS was a primary source document. They said yes. However, they said, if the state was using the MDS to derive payment, then the state had the authority to request any information they wanted to support those payment fields. That's what Indiana did, as well as Kentucky. And you'd never guess that Indiana and Kentucky and the word forerunner was in the same sentence. But honestly, we are, because for many, all the sections of the MDS at least deal with money, we have to provide documentation and show them that we have something to support the coding of that. And actually, that's a free document, and I'll give you at the end of the day, I'll throw up the website for you, I'll even throw up the document for you if you want to see it. But it goes through all 108 items, and it's a neat concept because it, in some of the fields, most of it are like does. If you mark diabetes on the MDS as a diagnosis, well, then you have to have a diagnosis by the physician of diabetes. That's duh. You know, if you have an IV medication that you coded in the last 14 days, you have to show in the clinical record that they had an IV medication the last 14 days. Duh. You know, those are like, most of them are just big does. But a couple of the ones, though, are interesting, and this is the first one, that on about a half a dozen, they ask for an example. So in order for us to get credit for coding somebody as having a memory impairment, we have to have a written example that describes an event that shows that they had poor memory. And that's a benefit to us. And that could be a benefit to you. Here's the reason why. Did you ask, you know, why would they not believe us in Indiana if I just checked they had a short-term memory problem and coded that in the MDS? Well, Indiana asked for the example because the nature of your example or how you've written it will indicate whether or not you understood the question. So if all of a sudden I said short-term memory problem as evidenced by resident couldn't remember what she had for lunch, guess what? They wouldn't give it to you. Why? Because your example didn't indicate that it was an immediate time frame after the person had lunch, because how does the reviewer know that you didn't ask that question 4 hours later? So the example says short-term memory impaired as evidenced by resident couldn't state what she had for lunch immediately after she left the dining room or within 5 minutes after completing the meal. So that way the assessor knows, or the reviewer knows, the assessor knows or knew how to assess that area. So examples are a very good thing, and that may be something that maybe 6 months to a year down the road you may want to consider adopting, because you'd be surprised that sometimes the nature of the example that the assessor provides would indicate I shouldn't code that on the MDS because it's not true. But this is an example of one that we would. So it lets the reviewer know that we understood the nature of the question. Now, how does the MDS manual tell you how to assess this area? Well, it says you can do one of two things. You can either A, go into the room or somehow get with their and ask them a question that both of you had the opportunity to observe. Well, that's very simple, very informal. And that's probably the two ways I would say is probably an easy way to do that. So who's responsible in your facility for providing the